Alors, septième groupe, c'est le groupe qui va travailler sur le rôle de l'histoire et de la mémoire dans la sortie de violences extrêmes et des violences de masse. Donc, des leçons comparatives avec Scott Strouse. Alors, Scott est professeur de sciences politiques à l'Université de Wisconsin-Madison, spécialiste de génocide, de la violence politique, des droits de l'homme et de politique africaine. Il est aussi l'auteur de beaucoup de livres, dont en particulier Making Nations, War Leadership and Genocide in Modern Africa, en 2015, et Fundamentals of Genocide and Mass Atrocity Prevention en 2016. Scott, vous avez la parole.
Merci. Alors, je vais m'exprimer en anglais parce que c'était la langue de notre groupe. And I'm also going to be brief because I think it's been a long day for many people. So we had an extremely rich and open discussion. We were a group that represented a number of different world regions, different disciplines, different experiences, and also quite different perspectives and different conclusions. And I want to thank the members of our group who I think we just had a fantastic discussion. I also want to say that we see a lot of links with some of the other groups up here, and that's to be decided in a bit, but I just want to put that out. We took as our core question, what is the relationship between memory in particular, and mass violence? And a couple kind of headline conclusions that we came to are, first of all, this is an extremely complex terrain with a number of manifestations of memory. That's first. Second, memory is almost always contested. It can be a source of cohesion, but is often a source of friction and division. Third, memory cannot be separated from context. And in fact, memory is often implicated in power and with power. Fourth, and as a kind of sort of takeaway point, if you will, I think memory can have some very positive elements to the aftermath of violence, but also some quite dangerous ones. And it can be a source of healing, but also a source of friction, as I said. And so we very much approached this, or one of our conclusions was a lot of prudence, a lot of hesitation about embracing memory projects, and a lot of criticality. And so our challenge for ourselves, for our group going forward, is how can we pay attention to some of the possibilities of memory and memory projects while paying attention to the risks when thinking about exiting from mass violence. So what I'll do now is just walk you through the seven major areas that we intend to study and intend to push ourselves to be specific on and to write about for the final report. And I'll highlight a couple points in each. So like many other groups, I think we wanted to define the kind of core concepts of our group, and in particular, what is memory? What do we mean by memory? And I think two of the most important distinctions that we talked about in our group at some length were forms of intentional memory or deliberate constructions of memory, or memory projects, if you will, and unintentional forms of memory, the way in which memory just sort of works, the effects of violence on memory. And the second, I think, major distinction that we talked about were forms of official or state-sponsored memory and unofficial or not state-sponsored memory. And of course, there are a number of ways in which we could disaggregate that, but let me leave it at that. So we're going to talk about what memory is, talk how it's different from history, talk about some of these distinctions in our group. The second major subject that we talked about is, what is mass violence? And what would an exit from violence look like? And I think, like, again, some other groups, we have a certain hesitation about whether or not there can be an exit from violence, that violence is encoded in states and is part of societies. And so, just as an initial point, terms of mass violence, we defined it as the deliberate, large-scale infliction of harm against civilian populations with a political purpose. Now, in terms of an exit from violence, we sort of tried, and I'll come back to this at the end, we tried to push ourselves, well, what is the goal here? What is the end state that one is trying to use memory for, to get to? What's the objective here? And I think this is something that we're going to continue to work on, but I think some of the core ideas of our group were the importance of social cohesion, inclusion, pluralism, moderation. That's how we would recognize what an exit from violence would be, as well as an actual reduction in physical violence against civilians. So the third major area that we covered and plan to cover are, I might frame it as, what are the effects of mass violence on memory? Or another way to frame the question would be, how do memories of mass violence work? What are the mechanisms? And we had a long, very rich, very intense discussion about the ways in which violence can be embodied in people, can be transfigured in all kinds of ways through emotional mechanisms, through trauma, although we had a discussion as to whether or not trauma is a useful term in this context, but ways in which violence can become insidious, both in individuals and also in among individuals in a collective. We talked about the way that violence can silence, can sort of smash voices and keep people in fear. We talked about intergenerational transmissions of violence, the way in which memory of violence is passed across families. We talked about diasporas and the way in which memories of violence can work across space and through migration, and a number of other elements. Okay, the fourth area has to do with these sort of memory constructions. If you think of what I just described as sort of forms of unintentional memory, the sort of fourth area that we focused on are kind of our constructions of memory, more formal efforts to recognize past violence. And again, this is a very complex process that involves states, that involves civil society, that can involve families, individuals, but also global actors, both a global circulation of groups, but also international organizations and perhaps organizations like ours can contribute to the production of memory. And I think here, I'm not going to go through all of them, but we developed and will continue to develop a list of both unofficial memory projects, like the Stolperstein example in Germany of having a stone that would be a memory to a Jewish family that was deported to a camp, various forms of art, whether they be painting and murals or music, civil society groups, exhumations, a variety of things. I won't go through all of them in the interest of time. And then official projects, official memory projects. So this could be a truth commission, it could be a street name, it could be a memorial museum, all kinds of public memorials, whether they be statues or monuments or plaques or massacre sites, et cetera. National parks, there's actually a huge range of things that we discussed, archives, et cetera. Now, the fifth area that we designated would be what I think what we loosely called the case for memory, or the case for memory projects. And here, trying to do justice to what the potential of some of these memory projects are, in particular after mass violence, the way in which that they can publicly acknowledge victimization and violence of the past, the way that they can create visibility and awareness, the way that they can pay tribute to lives that were lost, the way in which they can give visibility to excluded voices and marginalized voices in a society. the way that they can become a source of dialogue, a source of conversation. The importance of process here too, that process is, as one person said it, process is as important as the outcome. But a couple other things as well, but talking about what the potential benefits or possibilities are through memory projects. However, and this is our sixth area, we probably spend more time talking about what the risks are, or what we might loosely call the case against memory. And I think a number of us came to this from experience, seeing some of the dangerous elements of memory projects, if you will. And let me just isolate a couple of them, and then I'll conclude. One of them is that memory projects can reinforce division and cleavages in a society. If you think about violence as fracturing societies, often along identity lines, that memory projects can reinforce those same cleavages and differences in a sense of this is our history and that's your history and a variety of histories. I think that, as I suggested earlier, memory projects can be a source of power, a tool of legitimacy by states, and that that memory projects are designed to reinforce and give power to a group of people who control the state. So there are often political interests in what memories are told, and they're often and can be in conflict with more individual or more unintentional memories. A memory can justify power, in short. And I think in these two ways, memory projects can facilitate violence. Right? It's not always an exit from violence. They can create division. They can reinforce power. They can be an instrument of power. They create tendentious or very biased narratives of history. Also, one of the things we talked about is that memory projects should not be a substitute for politics. And memory, an overemphasis on memory can inhibit politics, can be a blockage toward politics. And in this version, I think if you think about the process of exiting violence as compromise and as about recognizing multiple viewpoints, about people not always getting what they want, memory projects tend not to lend themselves to compromise. They lend, there's no way to kind of compromise over victimization. And that here memory is essentially antithetical to compromise. Anyway, a couple other ways we talked about the risks of memory, and in particular, the way also the memory projects and monuments don't necessarily represent real change. They don't represent, they don't give people food, they don't give people power, they don't give people health, and these kinds of things. So to conclude, I don't know how long I've been, but I think what we're going to push ourselves to do is to what can we take away from this? What are, taking stock of some of the risks of memory projects, what is the potential of memory projects to contribute to an exit from violence? What can we imagine to be, perhaps better and worse memory projects in the aftermath of violence? So that's our task, and thank you.